Welcome to the True Sales and Leadership Podcast. This is a show where I get to speak to founders, directors, sales leaders, trainers, coaches, and thought leaders, getting their insight into all things sales and leadership. I'll be speaking to them about their journey to where they are today, how they have achieved success, sales processes, leadership strategies, what it takes to be successful, mindset, and much, much more.
Hi, Celeste.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Really excited about this one. I've obviously you came highly recommended and really keen to get your story and experience and your expertise in leadership. So I usually do a brief introduction before the podcast of the guest I have on, but just for the sake of the audience, just give us a bit of an overview of yourself and where you've come from.
Sure. I run a consultancy that's called very imaginatively Celeste Halliday, and I work specifically in the area of human connection and how that powers performance.
Yeah.
Both at an individual and a team and company level.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So where's obviously you've been doing that since what? What's your journey so far? Where did it all sort of start for you, and how did you get to, obviously, at what point did you set up that consultancy or know it was the right move for you?
I started off in advertising many, many moons ago. And when I was really young, my client, which was a big corporate, poached me. And I ended up in a job with a very small team. I had two people and a ridiculously large $70 million budget.
Wow.
And I was about 25 and realized that I'd spent over 4 years studying marketing and business. And actually the part of my job that I liked most was not marketing product, but working with the people on the team.
Okay.
So I had a bit of an early midlife crisis and completely shifted my focus to wanting to work with people and bring out the best in people and, you know, improve performance and just be very, you know, human about it. The problem with that was that I wasn't very good at it.
So I went on a crash course.
Of learning people. I was really naive. I was really bad at reading people. Didn't really understand what made people tick, but I'd always been fascinated with human behavior and why we do the things that we do.
Yeah.
So I ended up moving into recruitment.
Everyone does.
All the best people. And I learned a lot about reading people because you meet so many candidates and clients. I learned a lot about how business works, you know, and different types of people for different businesses. I ended up recruiting sales directors, so that was a journey in itself.
Yeah.
And from there, I moved into large change projects, so, you know, people, process, technology back in the day. And somehow from that point, with all sorts of businesses like Cadbury, Schweppes and Foster's and ANZ Bank, then I moved overseas. I went to London. And by that stage, I was doing large-scale business transformation. And I did a project with it was actually the biggest social healthcare business in the UK. And they ended up asking me to be their, what we would call COO. They call assistant CEO.
Yep.
And so I ended up having this job where there were 1,700 people in the business and, you know, 200-ish services all around the UK. And our business was a learning disability, mental health, and substance misuse. And it was terrifying for me because I'd never had lives on the line.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly people were actually dying, you know, based on things that we may or may not do. So it was something I really passionately wanted to be really good at and really fast.
Yeah.
And we'd done a financial turnaround, but there was a whole leading the people job then to do. And so I started doing all the things I'd been spending my whole career telling everyone else how to be a great leader and consulting internally on that, and suddenly realized that about half of it didn't actually work in practice.
Okay.
I learned that very fast.
So what did you do in terms of when you realized it was an area that you wanted to really hone in on, what what resources was you, what were you researching? What would you, did you go to do like training, that type of thing? Or what was the resource there?
Yeah, I ended up studying applied psychology. I became a psychotherapist.
Okay. Interesting.
And what no one tells you about that is normally the people that go into any kind of psychology or psychotherapy are trying to figure themselves out.
Yeah.
You do a lot of work on yourself, a lot of work on yourself in order to be able to help other people.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I just went on a bit of a crash course about how do you really lead and what actually makes businesses work and how do you improve performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I started trying to do all of that in the business that I was in. And really my consultancy was set up on the back of that, finding out what did work.
Yeah, yeah.
I had two small boys unexpectedly by that time. Yeah. And I see a lot of people walking into, I'm sure you've had this experience where you are in any large city, you see people walk into the revolving doors of big business.
Yep.
And they're checking their souls out as they walk in.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want that for my boys or anyone else's children. And so really the business was set up to change the way that work works.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. And at what point did you know that setting up your own business and going down that route was the right one for you? Was it like a light bulb moment whilst you were working for someone else? Or?
Yeah. I think I always knew that I'd end up doing my own business. I grew up in a small family business.
Yeah.
So business was the hot topic of conversation at our tables. And
okay.
Christmas was good or not, depending on how busy it was, you know.
Yeah.
And it just felt very much in my blood to do it my way and do my own thing.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So talk me through your role as a leadership coach at the moment then. So how does your, and I know you're extremely busy, so how does your day plan out and what does it look like, the role look like for you?
Yeah, well, I do multiple things. So I work as an executive or leadership coach.
Yep.
I do a lot of high-performance teamwork, so working with an intact team, whether that's a senior leadership team or a team in a business, to look at where are they working well, how are they working well, where aren't they working well, and how can they improve their business. And I work with whole organisations as well. So I do a real mix of big corporates and kind of cool startups as well. I do a lot in the tech space. So I work with people like Google and LinkedIn and now Facebook and, you know, big organizations in Australia. I work all around the world.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. And so when you're working with these organizations, what is it that you're helping them with? Where are they at that moment in time? And then what's that process that you go through and the outcome at the end?
Yeah, I have there's a real diversity in terms of the reason people choose to work with me. And it's always about wanting to improve culture.
Yeah.
And therefore improve performance. Yeah. So whether that's an individual who is on an exec coaching level who feels like they're stuck or they're in a brand new role and they want to really boost and accelerate. My coaching program is called Accelerate. They really want to boost and accelerate their performance.
Yeah.
You know, I think anyone who signs up to coaching, it's an act of bravery. You are putting yourself out there because it's hard work. You know, you've got somebody holding you to account and backing you, but holding you to account.
Yeah, of course.
And the same thing is really, it's the same thing with a team. It's when you sign up to work with somebody in this space, it's really saying that we want to level up. We want to do things differently. There is room for us to be better.
Yeah. So the culture aspect of it then, and that you mentioned there, is that when companies want to improve the culture, that sounds easier said than done, if you know what I mean. Obviously, it wasn't until I spoke to an MD of another business, and he said that culture is something isn't just a thing. It's something that's you sort of work towards. It's actually something that's instilled in the business right at the start, and it's actually everyone that's brought on board actually follows that and carries that on. But how does that, when a business comes to yourself and looks to, that's an area that they want to improve, how is that done, and what things do you look at?
I think sometimes they don't even know that's what they're looking for. Sometimes it's just things aren't working, or we're getting a lot of feedback that engagement is poor, or that our leaders are saying one thing and doing another. And that's all, you know, indicators that it's not an aligned culture.
Yeah.
And I work with businesses around high performance but trust-based cultures. So if trust is not established in the business, and I genuinely believe it's like a light switch, like it's either on or off,
yep.
then it's really hard for people to feel psychologically safe and perform.
It's amazing. And I've worked in companies myself where it's kind of changed overnight, where the twist has been there. They've got a really good culture, and then all of a sudden, it could be that the fact that a couple of people have actually been let go in the business through underperformance, and then everyone else feels on edge then, and the whole sort of culture is taken is actually taken a whole turn. So in terms of the businesses that you work within, then is there a set trend in terms of the issues that they're all facing, or is it every business that you work with quite different in their the things that they want you
Facing.
to work on?
Yeah, look, I think there are a lot of common themes. I think when you're talking about the culture thing, I often say you get the culture that you deserve. And I think that's people know when things aren't right, and they know when that leaders aren't actually walking their talk. And it's normally it does come from the top. When I did my very, very first board meeting and I was terrified going into it, the chairman pulled me aside and said, "Celeste, I will have one thing to say to you. A fish rots from its head," which is clearly a revolting idea, but what they're saying is true. Everyone contributes to culture, but there is very much a leadership role to understand what it is, be able to communicate that, and to role model it in the business. It's about what you walk past. It's about the decisions that you make and how you make them. It's, Simon Sinek would say, it's what you're doing when no one's watching.
Yeah, that's right. I do kind of follow him quite a bit, actually. He's a really interesting guy. So the top leaders that you look after them, what sort of traits do they have, and what separates those that are at the top of their game to the others that are probably just sort of coasted along more? So.
Well, I've got a really simple leadership model because I believe we really overcomplicate leadership. So, and there's, I've read so much of the theory and a lot of it's great, but I have a leadership model of four C's for people to follow. And if you do these four things every day, I think you're on your way to being a great leader. And the first one of those is care. And, Simon Sinek again would say that leadership is an act of caring. And I genuinely believe that you're signing up to help develop and grow and care for another person. And when you come at leadership from that and a very human, this is a relationship between two humans, two people, you suddenly change the whole thing. It becomes really simple. It stops being about processes and, that we're forcing people through and starts being about human connection. How deeply do we trust each other? How honest can I be with you? And then, how safe do I feel to take risk and learn and grow?
No, that sounds really, really good. And is that something that you feel that you could instill on leaders that are not quite hitting the mark yet and are underperforming, that you go in and give them that reassurance and the coaching to get there?
Look, I think everybody comes to work to do a good job. So I don't ascribe to this idea that some people are out there to be terrible. I actually think everyone really thinks they're trying to do a good job. So when, and it's really hard when somebody is, called an underperformer, even if they are, I think that we need to be striving for excellence in our role and really being very human about how we help people get there. So, it's a business, so people have to perform their jobs. But I think that sometimes we really don't help them succeed. In fact, we set them up to fail by getting them to a space where they feel like they're failing, and it becomes a thing that's ongoing then. They can't seem to get on top of it.
It's a real bugbear of mine, actually, and I've mentioned it. I only put a post out yesterday as well on LinkedIn that along the same sort of route. And I found in previous, and I've said this a number of times on the podcast as well, in previous roles where people have been promoted for the wrong reasons, or they've not natural leaders in the sense that they've shown any kind of skills or any kind of managerial expertise previously, but it's mainly been promoted down to performance, especially with related to sales. And then they get given the title of leader or a manager, and then what happens there is they underperform. That they because it's a lonely place, and it's not necessarily when you especially within sales, it's very sort of individual orientated. And when it becomes a part of a team, and then they're failing and they're struggling without the support of the company or any kind of training, and then they get looked at as underperformers. And you're thinking, well, you've kind of set them up to fail, like you've just mentioned there, and it is unfair. And I've seen it so many times where they've lost staff because of the particular leader that was in the business, and it's probably not their fault, because as you set point quite rightly say there, that no one goes to work to do a bad job. They think they're doing the right job, but it's actually not the correct way of doing things sometimes.
Yeah.
But without the support of the business, what are they meant to do? Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's obviously and I had Sonia McDonald on he was the episode that I released last week, and she said exactly the same. So she found it was a common trend in businesses that she dealt with as well. Do you find that yourself?
Oh, I think it does happen. I think there are some businesses who are doing a great job of this, and there are a lot of businesses who are trying but aren't necessarily getting there. I think that again, it's a cultural thing. I think if the culture doesn't have a genuine level of honesty and feedback, so if people aren't being supported but also told the truth about where they are and aren't doing a good job, then they're not able to necessarily understand, you know, what the blind spot is, what they need to improve. I meet lots of people who want to get better but don't really know why they're not doing the job or how they need to improve, because they won't be told. So this idea of like radical candor in the workplace is a great one, but it's got to be a cultural thing, because otherwise it feels like an excuse to kind of bash people up.
I completely agree with you.
It's got to be respectful, and it's got to be there from the start. You know, you're entering a business where you will be told the truth, and to help you grow and develop, and you'll be able to tell the truth about other people too. So a lot of the stuff that the politics and so forth that we hate fall away if you can establish trust like that.
Yeah. So what do you find? What would you recommend for businesses to do in situations like that, where they're looking to say promote a someone into a leadership role that's not necessarily got the experience? Is there like a process that you would expect them to run through, or something that you would recommend them doing in that regard?
Yeah. I mean, I think every business has its own sort of take on leading, but I think people have to be given some tools to know what their style is. I mean, leadership is all about, in my opinion, as well as having a real vision for what you're wanting for your area of the business and your team, how you want your team to work.
Yeah.
So being able to provide real clarity about where you are in the business and where you want the team to go.
Yeah.
It is about that caring. And then it's about being able to coach your team around whatever their skill set is, regardless of what the leadership role is.
Yeah.
And if they haven't got the skills to do any of those things, to you know, come up with a vision and be able to be clear about that vision with people, and then to help people work towards that, then they shouldn't be in the role of leader.
No, that's right. And sometimes, you mentioned there earlier on that you work with startup organizations within the tech space. Again, did you find that, because obviously setting up a business, you kind of thrown in at the deep end of leadership, because obviously you've got the idea of the business, you've grown the business to a certain point, and now you need to take people on board. Do you find that the people they're struggling? Some people are just not natural leaders in that regard, and then having to bring someone else in to run that part for them. Because I'm a firm believer in bringing people in that aren't obviously the part of the business that you're weakest on. Do you find that that's the situation there with the startups? How do you find
that? I often work with startups where they're kind of at that tipping point of, you know, coming up to the 50 people mark, or the 150 bigger, or the whatever, and you know, the really small ones as well. There's a real common DNA that I see in terms of the ones that are successful. And if the individual founder is not a, you know, natural leader or isn't interested in that, they tend to really quickly find somebody who is.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I find in these businesses is very often there is a really strong understanding of the values of the business. So they know exactly where they're going and why, what the mission is, and they know exactly how they're expected to behave with each other. And it's really simple language, and they really get it, just like a group of friends or a family would talk to each other without it being, you know, like motherhood statements that we sort of sometimes get in bigger businesses. And they call each other on it because they don't have time not to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's high stakes.
Yeah.
So I think that idea, that radical candor or honesty idea, it's often built into these businesses because they are moving fast and they don't have time you know, move around stuff the way that we sometimes do in bigger businesses.
Yeah, and how do you find it in comparison when the companies are at that stage of startup and then the larger organizations, in comparison to sort of culture, how much different is that in what that you find when you're working with them?
Yeah, well, I think it's much easier to have a really clear, fabulous culture when you can kind of put your arms around all the people. And it's much harder to do that in a big business. But my business is based on a concept of obviously connection, but also contagious leadership. Contagious leadership that is great and based on like positive psychology, you know, idea of caring for people and bringing out the best in people. It spreads contagiously through areas. Yeah. So I've often worked in a big business where one leader is exceptional and creates a brilliant culture in their team, and it catches, starts to spread to the people they're working with and then the people they're working with. Culture can be spread, you know, through organizations that way. But it's easier when you have a smaller group of people. It's harder to maintain it across a big, big business, but it can be done.
Yeah. And do you think when a business has got to a certain level and that the culture is not quite where they want it to be, is it possible to change to the way that they want it to be, or does it get to a point where it's gone too far past the point of return?
I never believe it.
Okay.
It's broken because businesses are made up of people and people aren't broken. So I think that, you know, we're infinitely capable. And if we're, think about feeling safe at work.
Yeah.
You'll rebuild it. You'll want to create something that may not have been what it originally started out as, but it'll be another fabulous version of, you know, a brilliant culture.
Yeah. So the leader, obviously you mentioned there about a leader within a big organization can have a big impact on the business there. But what do they do personally themselves in order to do that?
Yeah. I'm a big believer in the old fashioned concept of character.
Okay.
And it kind of links to the idea of authenticity. Mm. So the leaders that I work with that I think are brilliant and do have that kind of contagious spread, they're very self-aware. They're very clear on who they are. They've done the hard work on understanding what are their strengths and also what are the things they need to kind of manage and, you know, challenge themselves on.
Yeah.
And they tend to be pretty humble because they've had to work really hard on themselves.
Yeah.
So they're coming from a place where they've got the space, you know, to be able to do that with other people, and they want to.
Yeah.
And it's not about them. It is about the team. It's about business.
Yeah.
So I think they're probably the main things.
Okay, no, that's brilliant. And from your point of view then, how do you, when you're working with these leaders at that high level, how do you unlock their full potential as a leader?
I think I can be quite radically honest.
Okay, yeah.
Look, I think I genuinely believe I want the result for whichever client I'm working with more than they want it themselves.
Yeah.
So the thrill for me in this work is watching individuals and whole businesses transform to places and people that other people want to be around, people want to work with. There's a real sense of lightness and positivity, as well as hard work and excellence.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's really quite exciting to watch people light up and do that for other people as well.
Yeah. And do you recommend them any resources for them on the side of what you're offering in terms of people to follow, books to read, that type of thing?
Also, people that I love.
People that you're working with, do you actually recommend those types of things?
Well, I mean, I think Simon Sinek's great. He has a lot of really great ideas that are aligned with mine.
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of Brené Brown.
Okay.
I love her work around vulnerability and shame. And, you know, she talks a lot. I'm a recovering perfectionist.
Yeah.
And sometimes better than others. And she talks a lot about how perfectionism is just armoring up and protecting ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I've seen, you know, leaders read her work and it has completely changed the way that they work and live. It's beautiful work.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So in terms of if someone was looking to move into like a sales leadership position, what kind of advice would you give them in terms of the actual experience to What would you give them in terms of advice in moving into that if they were sort of didn't have that kind of experience but previously?
I think rather than it being some dark art, which I think a lot of people think leadership is, there's a lot of science in it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bit of a neuroscience geek. So I think be curious and educate yourself on, look at people that you admire in terms of who they are as leaders and figure out what it is that you admire about them.
Yeah.
And think about your own values, you know, the way that you would like to treat people in your personal life. I don't understand the idea of checking our personal selves out at the door of work and becoming some kind of work self that makes different decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to line up and be authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
It's interesting. I was just going to say there is from doing similar sort of podcasts with other leadership coaches and actual leaders themselves, I've noticed that leadership isn't just a title of work. It's just the it's how you should carry yourself all the time. It's not just in the work scenario. And it's funny that you should say that because it's something that I picked up last week speaking to Sonia that. It's not just a work title. It's more than that, and it's everyday life, and that's how you should carry yourself at all times and be seen as a respected leader.
Yeah, and I think about leadership as a practice, like meditation.
Yeah,
and we're never done.
Yeah, I noticed that. I seen your philosophy on your actual website, and I noticed that was one of your one of the lines that was on there. It should be practiced like yoga and meditation.
Yeah, we've got to check in with ourselves all the time, every day, and tweak and improve and experiment as well. Like, there's a lot to be said for trying different things and seeing how they fit.
Yeah. And what do you do to practice that yourself? What sort of resources do you sort of follow? And I know you mentioned Simon Sinek there, but is there any other things that you do personally?
In terms of my own leadership, I go out of my way to ask other people for feedback. And even now, even though it sounds like a very leadershipy thing to say, I still find it just as hard, I think, as everyone else. We're always, you know, a little uncomfortable with hearing things that we don't want to hear about ourselves.
Yeah.
So I try to practice what I preach and be very honest about where I'm doing well and where I'm not.
Yeah.
I also have a secret weapon that I use in terms of productivity and also reflection, which is called a self journal.
Okay.
It's, I buy them from the US. But they are a brilliant tool. It's just the whole way they've been designed is to make the most of your whole day. And it has a section for you to do some gratitude in the morning and also reflect on your wins and your learnings every day.
Yeah.
So it really encourages you to hold yourself to account about whether you're working on the stuff that makes the biggest difference, whatever it is for you.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. So what's that, Sidi? Where did you find that, the self-journal?
I don't actually know where I originally found it, but I buy them as gifts for my clients all the time because I have found it so useful for myself. It's a 13-week, roadmap, and I tend to work in 90-day blocks.
Yeah.
So you plan everything at the front. You have the what's your 90 days look like. You break down the calendar. You have your three main objectives that you want to get done.
Yeah.
And then that kind of follows right through everything else. And it just means that you're holding yourself very much to account and you're not doing all the stuff around I did some really busy non-effective stuff today.
That's it. Well, it's funny you should say that because for the last sort of few weeks I've been I follow a guy called Andy Frisella. He's a bit of a billionaire, but he's a bit of a maniac at the same time, and I'm doing his actual fitness program at the moment, 75 right. days hard it's called. But he says that there's he calls it the power of five list. So have five things that day that's going to take your business forward, whether it's a sort of sales calls, whether it's reaching out to so many people.
Yeah.
But having those five things and making sure that you get those done no matter what every day.
Yeah.
And then once they're done, that's it. And that's something that I've been doing. And it's been made me a lot more focused during the day, getting those done and making sure, because sometimes I think you kind of naturally procrastinate and thinking that you're doing a lot, but actually in actual fact, day to day, when you actually look at what you've done that day, you actually do very little sometimes. And then if you've got those five core things that you're doing day to day, and I found this work brilliantly for me, and it's something that I've been doing, and obviously I don't just give up once I've completed five tasks. I actually have I add other things to it after that, but making sure that those five things are done every day.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. And you mentioned, obviously, you sneaked it in there, but you mentioned about gratitude there. Do you have like a morning kind of ritual that you follow on a day-to-day basis then in terms of your writing down your goals and your
Yes,
reflection?
I do, and I have to be very human and real here and say I would love to say that I do this perfectly every day and I'm a guru, but I am not.
I'm the
I
same,
fall off
exactly
my
the same.
wagon all the time and have to pull myself back on. But on a perfect day, I get up and I exercise and I do my self journal and I probably actually journal a bit, you know, just free form, and I eat a really healthy breakfast. And I don't check my emails or any social media. And so by the time I actually do my first inverted commas work thing, I've already achieved a lot. But that does not happen every day, you know?
No, but
Travel.
how much better do you feel doing that though
Oh,
when you do it?
any day that I do that, it feels like a win before I've done anything. And that's half the point.
It is. It's crazy, isn't it? I'm exactly the same, and I've mentioned it on a podcast previously where my exact, pretty much exactly that. I'll wake up, exercise first thing, glass of water, write down my goals, short and long term, and then gratitude, eat a healthy breakfast, do a little bit of self-help reading, and then you set up your day for great. And I know it makes me feel better, and I know I have a better day, but for some reason I just don't do it often enough. And it's so, yeah, it's just such a, it's so strange, isn't it? And it's the same, like it's me now. I'm doing this 75 days hard. Part of that is actually eating clean, drinking a gallon of water, and no alcohol. And it's amazing that, and for me, it's usually a Friday where I feel like I need to wind down, and I usually have a glass of wine. But for the last 3 weeks, it's I haven't, and I feel so much better and so much more focused in the day as well, than when I wasn't eating well or wasn't drinking the water. But it's amazing that we just can't be like that
All
permanently
the
all the time.
time. Well, another person that I'd recommend to anyone listening is James Clear, who was out here recently. And he does his expertise is in habits and how we form them. And he talks about the fact that we really need to shift our identity to form a new habit. So, you know, I started running really late in life. And I'd always seen myself as somebody who couldn't and didn't run. And it wasn't until I'd been running and running and I'd run a race or whatever that I finally went, oh, I'm a runner. And once in my head, I thought I'm a runner, then I ran because it stopped being something I fought against and started being part of who I was. So I think
That's
that shift of I'm the kind of person who eats really healthy and, you know, gets up at, for me, it's six and does like a practice and all that stuff. The more that I identify with that and shift that, and then put the habits in place to make it happen, the more likely it is that I'll actually do it.
No, I completely agree with that. And yeah, it's you always I always read I follow the likes of Gary Vaynerchuk and Grant Cardone and those type of people, and they all seem to be those people that are up at a certain time, they've got the routines, and it is about breaking that habit. And what I've learned doing this 75-day hard is actually the things that I if I overthink anything, I'm just basically doing every day as it comes now. So I'm not just thinking like I've got to do 75 days of this. I'm actually going, right, okay, today I've got to do this, this, and this, and then that's done. And I
That's
try and
perfect.
so then there's 10 another one is 10 pages of a self-improvement or business book that you read every day. And I've just got into a habit of doing things now, and that's what it is. And I'm hoping at the end of it I'm not going to say, right, okay, I'm getting to Fridays and I want a glass of wine. I'm thinking actually I'll go for a run instead, and doing that way. But it's funny because I've run on and off for most of my life, but it is a mental game running, and more so than it is fitness. Once you've got your fitness there, I think, because I still start now and I'm doing 2,000, I get to 2Ks and then I want to give up. Even now, and even though it's not even a fitness thing, it's a mental thing. But you kind of push through that, and then you get to sort of a bit further, and you realize actually, why did I want to stop then? Just keep going. And do you find that as well when you're running as
Oh,
well?
absolutely. You know, as I said, I wasn't a runner, and I remember I did a marathon, which I thought was something I could never ever do.
Wow. Okay. I've only
And
done a half myself, and that was hard enough.
they're all hard, and I don't know if they ever get any easier. But I remember somebody saying to me, you know, there's this wall, mental wall in a marathon, because your body's gone past the point that it should ever have gone. You know, you've run longer than you should have ever run, and you've used up all the resources, and then it is a and they describe this wall that you come up against where you just can't go any further. And if you break through the wall, then you stand a chance of finishing, you know. And honestly, I didn't believe in the wall.
Okay.
the wall is real. The wall is real.
That's it. And what was it? What were you thinking at that time? Is it just a case of just let's get to the end and get over it?
I mean, I was doing all the positive self-talk I could possibly have done, but my body was hurting.
Yeah.
I had nothing left. And so you realize how powerful your brain is, that you find something from somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm no hero. I don't even know what it was in the end. Probably with me, I didn't want to say I hadn't done it.
Yeah, that's it. You just get to that point, doesn't it, where you're kind of halfway through and you're like, well, I can't stop now. I've already sort of committed. Yeah.
I said I would do this, so now I have to do it. Mm. And you just find some way to push through. It changes everything. I often talk about anything like that we do that we think we couldn't do. Mm. It's like a door or a window that wasn't there before opens in your brain, and you think, that was the best part for me. It's like, wow, if I can do that, which I never thought I could do, what else can I do?
It's so amazing because I did the I did have a fear of heights, a really bad fear of heights, and I climbed the Harbour Bridge in Sydney.
Oh yeah,
and that was something I never thought I would be able to do ever. Yeah. Because being up at that, my stomach used to turn just looking at people on there.
Yeah,
but to get me up there, but once I was up, I was fine, and then it got past the point of fear of looking. Usually if I look down and I was like really petrified, but I was looking down through the bridge and I was actually fine. And I think a lot of the time it's mental, and once you pass that point of like nothing's gonna happen, I think you kind of get your head around it. And it's funny that you should say that.
And that whole idea that fear, you know, it is driving our behavior so often.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's a barriers and stopping you from doing a lot of things. And once you've got through that, I think your opportunities are endless.
That's right.
Yeah. So you got any exciting plans for yourself, the business in the coming year, Celeste, in terms of what's coming up?
Yeah, I have many exciting plans. I've got a lot of really interesting client work that I'm doing at the moment. And as I said before, I'm starting to do a lot more. I was in London for a long time, but I've started to do a lot more globally. Yeah. And I'm particularly interested in the idea of how we build genuine human connection and trust, which is the DNA of high performance.
Yeah.
With businesses that are all remote. So I'm working with a business at the moment, and it's the largest remote business in the world.
Wow.
So they don't have an office.
Yeah.
And it's a really fascinating conundrum because we're still learning how do we do this effectively when we're not face-to-face.
Yeah.
And we don't have that. The way that humans tend to build connection isn't there in the same way.
Okay.
So I'm also starting the research for my book. And so I'm going to start interviewing lots of people about their experiences of how, you know, moments of connection have changed their lives and how they use that in their work and their business.
Okay.
And how that drives performance. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you written a book previously, or is this the first?
No, this is my first book. Yeah. And like a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to hit the wall.
Yeah. No, of course. And have you got a target on when that's going to be completed by, do you think?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'm
you put it out there.
The outline done by February.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What, 2020, yeah?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I want to have at least the guts of it there.
Yeah. Oh, well, good luck with that. I hope I'll be looking out for it and be championing it as well. So
thanks, Adam. Thanks fantastic. For holding me to account.
Yeah, there you go. You have to put it out there. Excellent. And so if any of the audience wanted to get hold of you, Celeste, what's the sort of best routes and platforms for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, well, I'd love anyone to connect with me on LinkedIn. Yeah. And my website is my name, so Celeste Halliday.
Yeah.
And all my contact details are on there.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Well, I'll make sure once we post the podcast that's all over the post, so everyone can reach out to you as well. But I really appreciate your time today. It's been great to get your thoughts on leadership and the experience that you've got. And
the pleasure, Adam.
I look forward to keeping in touch moving forward. But all the best with everything.
Thank you, and good luck with not having that glass of wine this afternoon.
I really appreciate it. It was out of my mind, and now it's back in. But thank you. Thanks, Celeste. Really appreciate it. You have a good afternoon.